What's the name of the podcast, Ethan?
I don't fucking know.
Yeah, it's not comedy.
It's not going to be a podcast. It's going to be a fucking train wreck.
I wouldn't say that.
Take this away, Mitch.
All right. Neil Kahatka. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. That's cool, man. That's good. I always pronounced it Kolhatka, and then when I was 21, my dad was like, it's actually Kolhatka, and I'm like, it's too late. you needed to tell me that before. It's way too late now.
You live 21 years pronouncing your own
name. No, that's what it is now. Sorry to the ancestors. You can't tell me that 21 years into my life.
That's crazy.
And basically, I think you just said it with an Indian accent anyway.
Yeah.
Kolhatka sounds... Yeah. I say it with a kind of American accent because it doesn't really work with a Kolhatka.
Kolhatka.
I say it with an American accent.
Yeah. It's not like fucking Kolhatka.
Kaka. Kaka.
Kolhatka.
Shorten it.
Sounds like a lizard.
Yeah.
And see the Kolhatka coming up the tree right there.
Oh, thanks for coming on, dude.
Thanks for having me.
Untamed happening. Tonight?
Yeah. Good crowd in. Long weekend. We love it here. Best club in the country.
You reckon?
Yeah, definitely up there.
It's a good room.
I think it's run by comedians.
That helps.
That's what we think.
Yeah. Definitely helps.
You know the struggle.
There's a little bit of magic in the air too. Like, I think that people just like, I don't know. Just because I think James just has some sort of magical powers to draw people in. That's what it's come down to. Like, how do you market shows? How do things work? It's just like, it's up to luck, really, at the end of the day. Like, how many tickets are you going
to
sell?
Yeah, they just know how to get people in. Yeah. Chills is like that in Sydney. They just...
Skinner?
They just know, yeah.
Yeah, I did magic a gig for him last Wednesday with Maxi. It was fucking sweet.
Yeah?
Good gig, yeah.
ID Comedy, yeah.
Yeah, man. At Magic Mike.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, good room.
It's a good room, yeah. He runs them real well. Just kind of gives you a lot of freedom and lets you do what you want. And I think the scene needed that because it was getting very sanitized and bookers were saying, you know, you can't say this, you can't say that, and really trying to control comedians. And I understand the impulse running shows. You want comedians to do – sometimes it's easier for them to do the safe option because you know that's the material that works and that's what's going to keep the crowd happy. But – To be a room where that comedians like, you gotta allow them to fail sometimes and try some new stuff.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I had a big problem with someone down in Sydney like that. I won't name names, but essentially what it does is pigeonholes the comics into like doing the same material over and over every week.
Yeah.
Because they're too scared to try anything else. And if they're like, just give me your best stuff every week, then that's what happens. You just run out of steam. And then people stop coming back. You don't have repeat customers. They're like, I've seen this exact act the week before.
Yeah, you just know that if that person was ever in government, they would be a dictator.
Yeah.
Because it would be all about, let's control things to make it as simple and just automatic as possible rather than just let people be free.
That's why I think that, I don't know if you, have you run any open mics like when you started doing comedy?
I've never run like a proper open mic. The first room I ever ran, get this, was because I went to Sydney Uni back in 2013.
Yeah.
And I also won't name names, but the one person who ran both the rooms there never let me on. And so I was like, fuck it, I'm going to start a comedy room at UTS.
Yeah.
So I didn't even go there and I ran the comedy room there and they had a bit of a budget, so it wasn't an open mic, but
Yeah,
we had like Tom Ballard in, we had Mikey Robbins. That's when I first met Frenchie as well.
Yeah, nice.
Before he had
It's like bit like getting names in.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was a good little foray into booking and contacting some of the bigger names. So I was just, 18, 19 doing that. It's hard running rooms, man. It's way more stressful than performing, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's also very rewarding when the night goes well and all the comedians tell you how good the room is. I don't know what they say behind my back, but at least to my face they tell me it's good. So
yeah.
That's very rewarding, so it's worth it.
Yeah.
When it goes well, I think like running a night and it goes well, it's like almost better than getting up there killing, but not quite.
Yeah, they're both different feelings, but that's because you've kind of fostered an environment that a lot of people enjoy. I think that's really, that's just really rewarding. I think it's great.
Yeah. But yeah, running open mics, like, it's just, you know, you got to let everyone on. Like, that's open mic. Otherwise, and then it gets weird. It's like these curated open mics, and then people aren't getting paid for spots, even though it's a book show. And then people start selling tickets for it. And then it's like, it just gets real fucked up real quick. And it ruins the industry.
So. Yeah, curated open mic doesn't even.
Doesn't make sense. Doesn't
compute.
It's like reversing forwards. You can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah, just exactly. An ego stroke.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's like, oh, yeah, you can come do my open mic. And that's what it is. It's like, oh, yeah, you're in the club now. And this is my club sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like I'm in an open relationship, but I'm also only going to sleep with you.
Yeah.
It's like you're just using the language without actually living it.
Yeah.
I think what that is someone wants to pay comedians like it's an open mic, but book comedians like it's not an open mic.
Yeah.
That's probably what it is. Yeah, so
pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Why would you go to all the effort? Like, it's pain in the ass booking comedians. It is. Fuck, dude. Like, yeah, it's awesome in that, like, if you're running your own show or whatever, it's great. You've got your own freedom. You've got no one to tell you what to do or whatever. But then you're dealing with comedians. So, like, oh, yeah, fucking last minute, old mate's pulled out. Like, fuck, now I got to find someone. Or do we do longer? Like, what do we do? Like, there's always that stress.
Yeah.
All right, like, why you'd go through that just for a fucking open mic?
But it's all just to stop people bombing. And it's like, it's fine if you bomb. Like, even if you bomb on a paid show, it happens.
Mm.
And if it's a good show, like, and people are pushing it, like, sometimes that's going to happen. It's part of the fucking game.
It's crazy to run an open mic and try to control it so that people don't bomb. I feel like if you're coming to see an open mic, you expect to I'd be disappointed if I went to an open mic and everyone was good.
Yeah, man.
I don't want to see this shit, man. I wanted to see people who were trash.
Yeah.
Who have been in their basement their whole life, watched a few videos of Bill Burr and think they're going to be hilarious, and they come on and
say some
every woman
shit.
In the audience hates them. That's what I want. That's what I paid $10 to see.
Yeah,
not this curated bullshit.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Do some people actually run curated open mics?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That's
not here.
That's silly.
Down in Sydney, dude.
Yeah. Oh look.
And it has kind of died off. I will give Sydney that. Since COVID, like, there's been a lot less of that stuff going on, and the new bunch of comics that are coming through. That are running heaps of open mics, they're just doing it like everyone can just get on, which is sweet. It's good to see.
As it should be, yeah.
But the other side of that is it's sort of, I can watch this, it's going around in a circle because there's heaps of new open mics opening up and then closing like soon after because people are saying crazy shit.
Yeah,
and I think it's because of the crazy shit, but it's like, it's not. It's just you didn't have a stage. You didn't have a light.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have a fucking gig. Like, that's why it got shut down.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where the best open mics are when there's an established club that usually on a weeknight just runs an open mic and it's a way for them to kind of foster the talent coming through. Like, I know you guys do that on a Tuesday or you do the...
We've got a Tuesday and we've got Wednesdays. We do a talent show here now that I'm running with Mitch, and Mitch is running one new material night.
Yeah, they're always the best. I know... When I started, there was a place called the Laugh Garage in Sydney, and they had an open mic on a Wednesday, amateur night on a Thursday, which was basically just somewhere between open mic and the pro night.
Okay.
But it was a lot more, like, they were very strict about who got on at their pro night. You had to crush at the open mic, then you had to crush a few times on the Thursday night, and then they let you on, whereas seems like what happens now is you can just do 2 years of sign up on the night open mics. And then say, yeah, I have 2 years of experience, and then get on and not do that well. And then
you can bomb your dick off.
Kind of ruins. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, they didn't get me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because you've been performing to comedians for 2 years. And
we
have a very different sense of humor to the average person.
Yep.
So the whole like infrastructure, I guess, or the way that the scene is structured is kind of not conducive to producing the best comedy. I think in America it's a lot stricter. Like, they won't let you on at certain clubs unless you've got to be a crusher and you've got to consistently show. They'll let you do whatever you want. They'll give you freedom, but and there's also more competition for spots, and they probably have a lot more money to play with and things like that. This is a very small pie here, and just kind of do what we can, and it's also sort of fun. That also I like that about it. It's very sort of Wild West and bare bones.
Yeah.
But yeah, it comes with positives and negatives for sure.
Yeah. The new material night that I do here, it's like 10 minutes. You get 10 minutes and you can go fucking wild. And then so it's always like, oh, like pro guys, out of towners, whatever, if you want a spot, hit me up, fucking 10 minutes.
Yeah, sick.
Yeah. And I'll also get like an open micer as well, one open micer a week, and I bring them up like the feature act sort of thing, like this guy's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And right. Like build the crowd behind him, because I did it last week and we had Steve Lurch on, who's a fucking menace. Like he's the epitome of an open micer, just fucking okay. Throwing the most heinous shit at the wall.
Okay.
And I love that. It, man. He's my favorite act to watch. I brought a friend around here like last week. He's about to get on stage and I just turned around and go, this is my favorite act. She goes, really? I go, yeah. Watch this.
What sort of themes are we talking about here?
Like,
my favorite joke of Steve's. This is my favorite Steve joke. He goes, I have ADD, AIDS, diarrhea, and depression. That even got Max up the back.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's unhinged. Love it.
Yeah. He's like, makes an abortion joke. He's like, she had twins, so it was a 2-for-1 deal.
That's good.
Yeah. But then he'll just go on a random tangent. He'll just be like, oh, what's the Shania Twain thing?
No, he'll go, I thought of that one at the Pink concert that I went to.
Yeah, he just says.
And he's got long, like, braided fucking Viking hair, and he's a big dude.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's.
He's a legend. And if it was curated open mics in Sydney, he would have never been on stage.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have got a shot.
No way. Yeah. They wouldn't let anyone do that at an open mic in Sydney, I reckon. Maybe, you know what, at Chills' rooms, he might. He doesn't really run open mics.
If he did like, because there was rooms of just a bucket draw, and just everyone gets on.
Yeah.
You get on that. But yeah, there's nowhere to go up from there.
I think there probably would be a market if you just said, look, we don't endorse what any of these cunts are saying on stage, but they're allowed to say whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
Pay $10, come see a bunch of unhinged people trying comedy.
Yeah.
I would go watch that with my friends.
Yeah,
that would be fun.
We ran a show like that here.
Yeah.
No holds barred. Yeah. Where you just say whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
The most insane shit.
Yeah.
Dude, it's hard to because.
And we had like 60 people come to the first week of that.
Oh, that's wild. Sick.
Yeah,
it's good.
And they're a good crowd. They're down for it.
Sometimes when you get, because what, obviously with Comedy Untamed, the whole point of it is it's loose in the sense that it's like unrestricted in the second half and stuff like that. Because what we've found is that sometimes if you brand the show as like Untamed, I don't know if you guys found this, you kind of get people coming in expecting the real harsh shit. Mm. And just because you're letting comedians do whatever they want doesn't mean they all are going to do that.
Yeah.
And people will message and be like, you know, I came, it was funny or whatever, but there was not any controversial stuff.
Yeah.
Like, look, I can't guarantee that.
He's like,
I'm letting them, they're allowed to, but I'm not saying they have to. Then that would be the other way. Like, I'm not letting you on again because you were too safe.
Yeah.
Too much of a pussy.
Yeah.
Get up there and say a slur.
Yeah. You need to really go hard on the originals.
Could have gone further on that one. Yeah. Imagine that, you get feedback, but I made some notes for you. You could have definitely dropped 3 more N-words in there for sure. It just isn't good enough. It's 2032 now. We're past this.
Yeah. The pendulum has swung.
It's
the fucking pendulum. I'm so sick of hearing about the pendulum. But, it is crazy with those crowds too, because you can get some of them like expecting the really fucked up shit and you're just like, no, we're normal people too.
Yeah,
like,
you don't really
want to start a rally here.
Yeah, you kind of don't. I've found like super woke, but also super anti woke crowds are both not the best.
Yeah,
because they'll cheer at stuff that they agree with, but then they won't actually be there for jokes. They'll just be there to, yeah, you said the most fucked thing. That's I'm gonna clap even though it was a bad joke or
even though it was ironic, but I didn't
pick it up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that it goes over their head.
Yeah.
You're probably making fun of them.
Yeah. This and then joke's they didn't about get it. You.
And then, I get that sometimes. Like, I'm glad you go after every race. I'm like, well, look, I don't know that the way you're saying that is kind of weird. But
yeah. Oh, one of the I hate everyone equally.
Yeah, kind of that thing.
I've met a few.
You've got stickers on your ute, don't you?
Yeah, there's one of those guys. I will say this. I reckon if you get, I try to have a sort of not as though like I change who I am, but I try to have a set that I reckon will do well at a woke room, but then also a kind of harsher room.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a room in Sydney, like I won't name names either, but it's known for being a very progressive kind of room. Yeah. But I'm always like, look, I want to go there and I want to still try to crush, and see how well I can do there.
Because
It's actually a better feeling sometimes going to a room like that and then being able to do a gay joke or something, or being able to do a...
To get away with it.
To do it with enough intelligence to it that they'll still laugh at it is...
100%, dude. It's very rewarding. And I don't understand when people are like, oh, you're like bending over backwards and doing all this stuff. It's like, yeah, but I'm still writing my own jokes and they're working for particular rooms. Like if I go out... We've got a room, the Cheeky Dog, that's at Soldiers Point, and it's predominantly, I'm going to say, like 80% older people.
Yeah.
Like retirees. You're not going to go up there straight away and just being like sex jokes off the bat, because old people don't fucking like it, because reminding them of what they can't have anymore. They do not like it. They like it when females do it. If like a female comic gets up there and is just like, yeah, my pussy, then they're like fucking sick.
Yeah. But, really? That's interesting, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. The older folks, if you're a younger man and you're like, I'm fucking, they're like, we hate you.
Yeah.
Because we ain't doing that anymore.
Do you reckon they're like intimidated by that?
I don't know if it's intimidated. I think it's just like they just think that they're above that now. I think.
Yeah.
I think they look down on you a bit if you're just like, oh, it's just all sex jokes and shit. They think it's like lower.
Yeah, right. Oh, man, that's the worst. I think that's the most NPC comedy opinion, when it's like a good comedian shouldn't swear and shouldn't talk about sex.
Yeah.
Right.
What else is there?
You don't say that for movies, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, good movies shouldn't have sex scenes. No one says that.
Yeah.
You can still talk about those things in a clever way. It's such it's like probably the most important part of the human experience in a way. So
yeah,
I hate that opinion, man. I think that's so dumb.
It depends on, like, if it's an open mic and it's just 10 dudes one after the other just being like, yeah, and I came today, then it gets a bit fucking boring.
Yeah, but for sure. Yeah, there's a way to do it you can do it in a clever way.
Yeah, but if you're doing like a 10-minute set and there's like fucking 4 minutes of sex jokes in there, it's like, whatever, like, it's fine.
Totally, yeah, and you can take a different angle. If the punchline is like, and then I fucked her or something, then that's dumb. Yeah. But
but if it gets a laugh, it gets a fucking laugh.
Yeah,
so.
True. Yeah. Laughs a laugh.
Yeah,
take what you get, right?
You get that with some jokes as well, where you're like, you don't realize the punchline's there. And you hit something, and then the crowd laughs, and you're like, oh, wait a second.
Oh, it's so humbling. Yeah, hey, when you're like, oh, I thought this part of the joke was funny, and then the crowd's like, not consistently, crowd's like, no, that part isn't funny, but this other part where you stumble on it or where you say this other thing, that's funny.
Yeah.
You can tell the comic, because now there's a lot of internet comedians that don't really do spots and just kind of go and do their shows.
Yeah.
And they haven't been, you know, that it kind of hasn't been, I guess... Crowds are maybe like a bit of sandpaper in a way, where they'll kind of like help you properly form the joke and make it as smooth as it possibly can be.
Yep.
And they're just going out there with what they think is funny.
Mm.
And there's always just misses in there. It's never full hits. It's just hit, miss, miss. But then because the crowd really loves them, they're kind of lulled into a false sense of security. So a good club scene, I've been thinking about this lately, like a good healthy club scene is probably the most important thing to any comedy industry. And that's where why you got all the great comics coming out of London or New York. It's because just the club scene there was so strong, and you could be a full-time club comedian for 10 years while you work your way up before you got the HBO special or whatever.
It's such a different style of comedy, hey? Like just being like doing club spots.
Just doing the – but they're so – I think that's the comedy that the general audience likes the most, whereas in Australia you're kind of forced to do other things. You're forced to do the narrative type of material because you need to do a show every year because that's how you make money.
Yep.
You're forced to then go into you know, it's kind of sad that how in Australia you reach a certain level of success in stand-up comedy and then you stop being a stand-up comedian. You become a media personality. Mm. You become a host. You become a radio star.
It's like a launchpad for something else.
Yeah, it's yeah. That's why everyone on the street is like, oh, Australian comedy. It's because we don't have a good, healthy club scene that can allow people to be full-time club comedians and not have to become fucking Dazza and Bazza in the morning and not work on their club material.
Do you feel like you were getting shoehorned into like that direction with like where you're at in comedy?
Well, no, I don't have any management right now. So, and then you look at mainstream media now and you think, well, look, there's money there, but fuck, what the hell? What do you want to, what's there that is actually looks fun? You know, it looks
type of thing. Like you get paid.
Maybe radio, because you just get paid so much. Yeah. You'd think, but you know, I wouldn't enjoy it because can't really be too edgy or you know, it's kind of just dumb shit. It's like,
even if it is edgy, it's like Kyle and Jackie O style.
Yeah, it's not. It's look. To be fair, I shouldn't be too critical. Like they're really good at what they do, and it's also, I think 100%. It's a different skill. I'm good at 10-minute spots and maybe an hour show once every year or 2 years, but to speak for 3 hours and just be funny and at fucking 5 a.m. in the morning, that's not for me. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd rather not do that. I'd love to keep this going in a way where I can just do stand-up. Mm. It's pretty rare in Australia, though. Like, basically, Carl Barron's the only guy that does that. All the others... Will, Husey, they all do media stuff in some way, shape, or form. It's very rare in Australia that is just a stand-up comedian.
It's interesting to see that, and then, like, the next sort of, like, iteration of people coming along is guys like you and Frenchie and Butterfield, who are, like, you're your own, like you said, you don't have management, but, like, you're running your own thing, and then, like you said, you sort of become, like, a media person. As well as a stand-up comedian.
You kind of do, yeah.
Because you have to wear all the hats and you have to be like, I'm my own promo, I'm my own marketing, I run my own shows, I do my own hours. Like, it just... And that's, like, the next level of what it's becoming.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Because, if you're not doing the media stuff and you don't have a manager, you basically have to spend... It's basically... You're also managing yourself as a part-time job. Mm. And so it's limiting how much I can just focus on... Look, there's no perfect... solution, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the dream has always just been just to do stand up and be known as that and be able to just do shows. But look, you can't in Australia. There's just you're limiting yourself in a way because you don't get the exposure of someone who's on TV or something like that. And I do like making sketches. I think there's, you know, there used to be a lot of sketch shows on Australian comedy, and we don't really have that anymore. And then now even internet content's gone more towards vlogs and commentary and podcasting. Nothing against podcasting.
They're fucking awful. And every cunt starts a podcast and they all suck, ours included.
Well, I wasn't going to say, but, you know. Because
you've got to get your clip out for the week. You've got to fucking check the box. It's shit.
Yeah, it's this kind of content. I got to appease the algorithm and you're like a slave to the algorithm. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting kind of time. But I still think it's always positives and negatives. I think the positives now is that the gatekeepers don't have as much control as they used to, which is good. And because, you know, they're a bunch of dickheads anyway. Yeah. So,
and TV's dying as well.
Yeah.
So like a lot of those guys who were those gatekeepers, like you're like, ah, motherfucker, you're on the way out now.
Yeah,
like you can't.
Yeah, like Mr. 9 News or whatever it was, Channel 9, dude. Like, I was at the club the other week. This pissed me off so bad.
Dude, this is the most insane story.
He comes up to me like, someone had just done a show and there was like something wrong with the mic stand, so I was like fixing it for the showcase to start. And he comes up to me and he's like, do you like work here, or are you one of the owners, or what's... And I was like, yeah, I just work here, man. He's like, oh, yeah, because I'm from Channel 9 and... we were going to like do like a comedy, like come in and film some stuff and stuff like that. And I was like, oh yeah, man, I'd be more than happy to like put you in contact with like James or whatever. And then he goes, well, actually, I'm not going to do it because of your fucking attitude. And I was like, what?
What the fuck?
This dude was like pretty drunk, hey.
That sounded like you were being nice anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't like, I'm over the moon to see this guy.
What does he expect?
Yeah. He expects
me Channel 9, can I suck your dick right now?
Yeah, that's what he was expecting, Jesus. And I didn't give it to him, so he, like, fucking cracked it at me. And
you shushed him as well.
Huh?
You shushed him during the show.
I forgot about that. Yeah. He was talking in the show, and I told him to, like,
hey. Like, well, look, if you were Channel 7, I would, but Channel 9,
get fuck off. Yeah. And so I chased him out of the club. I was like, who are you? I was like trying to take photos of him because I wanted to like show the boys and be like, if this cocksucker comes back, don't let him in. He was like going down the stairs. I've got a photo of him what is the like a current affair style? He's like covering his face on the way down the stairs.
You ACA'd him.
Yeah, I did. Except I went even further and I did call him a cocksucker as he was going down the stairs. It's like, fuck, I love my job.
That's mad.
But I can just call people cocksuckers when they are bad ones. Yeah. Oh, so good. Don't come back.
Yeah.
Like, fuck for that.
Now, I would watch that if he filmed that on Channel 9.
Yeah,
that would
be
great.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Dealing with hecklers.
Oh, man.
That would be a fun... Actually, that would be a great show.
Dealing with hecklers? Yeah, dude, we had one last night. It was fucking... It was insane.
I heard about him, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. He thought he was a bit of a comedian himself. And
he did, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there's always one. Always one in the audience.
Quick around here.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny?
Have you heard? What happened?
No. Like, tell me the story.
So good. So basically, we're like doing the show. And Elliot's like, this guy comes up to the door and he's like, oh, can I get on? To the showcase. Yep. He's like, he wants a spot.
Yeah.
And it's like, Elliot's like, nah, dude, that's not how it works. Like, open mic's on Tuesday. You can come along to that. And like, already there's something off about this guy. Whatever. He comes in and sits down like by himself. And then he's like up at the bar, like ordering food and drink and stuff, like being really loud. And I'm on the tech desk just looking back, just like, come on, Elliot, just get this guy away from the bar. Just, this needs to stop. Anyway, gets him sat down. It's all going well for like the first three acts. Hasn't said anything. And then in like the fourth act, I think it was like Nathan was on. And then like halfway through his set, the guy just calls out at like maximum volume. It's like a packed out show. He's up in the back row. And he's just like, is this a Nazi club? Like, what?
To Nathan, who is
Nathan,
Asian, by the way.
Who was the only ethnic person thus far on the lineup. You couldn't have done this when one of the first three white guys was on, you fucking idiot. And he thought it was a joke. He thought he was making a joke. And it was just like, like, heckler's fine. Like, usually I won't say anything. Like, let the comedian deal with it, whatever. But just the volume of it, I was like, I just reacted and went like, dude, shut up.
You know what you should say? You should be like, hey, you want a comedy spot? There's this great guy who works at Channel 9. That's where we're going to film you. Get them in contact with each other.
So anyway, kicked him out, told him to leave. And then he's like, oh, they didn't get my joke. It wasn't a joke, brother. You just said, is this a Nazi club? Yeah. And we went, what the fuck are you talking about?
You didn't even get your joke, cunt.
And then, I'm trying to tell him to, like, fuck off in the lobby because he's being loud. And then Elliot's like, stop, he has, like, a disability or some shit. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. He needs to leave. I don't care if it's Stephen Hawking. If he's yelling this shit out, he's got to fucking go.
He's like, clearly this man is retarded.
Yeah. It was fucked, dude.
We've got a no retards policy.
That's the fourth one on the board. That's going up. No recording during sets. No talking to each other. You can't take your drinks outside and no fucking retards. Oh, my God. This is fuck. Anyway, it doesn't happen that often. You'd be surprising.
Yeah, it's probably like 1 in 10.
Yeah.
And that's always the story. Anyone who doesn't do comedy, that's the first question. Like, oh, how do you deal with hecklers?
Mm.
Yeah.
Usually you just tell them to shut up and the crowd is on your side. And
yeah.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
The crowd was not on this guy's side.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people turning around being like, dude, shut up.
Yeah, no dude, one's... It's very rare. I don't think I've ever seen a show where the heckler is actually representative of the crowd. once or in 10 years, like once or twice maybe.
Yeah.
And it was just because there was a total bomb, but
yeah,
pretty rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ethan had a fucking beauty on Tuesday.
Did I?
Yeah. You were doing...
the therapy chick.
Yeah. Doing sets and Ethan's like, oh, doing therapy. Some chick yells out, clearly not enough. And Ethan's like, what? What? She's like, maybe you should go twice a week.
Fucking hell.
And then Ethan's like going back, so just giving her enough rope to hang herself. And he's like, she said something else. And it was about, because she took issue with what Ethan was saying. And then.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it got real quiet and Ethan goes.
It's like in reference to something that I won't mention.
Yeah.
I won't name names. But yeah, someone's mother called me up and was like, if you do any more jokes about that, I'm going to sue you for defamation.
No.
Yeah. Big time lawyer too. Yeah. So I was like,
Can people do that?
I don't know.
Because you wouldn't have been naming the person, so.
Yeah.
They surely can't prove something. I guess.
I know.
And I swear, like, most legal threats are just bluffs by people who sound like they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I will sue you for defamation. And then you're like, all right, does this person actually have a case? No, but could I be fucking bothered going to the court?
Fighting a frivolous lawsuit. Yeah.
So that's still going to cost me.
Yeah.
And that's what the pain in the ass is.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, we need. I think in America you can't do that because they're just like, yeah, free speech, just say whatever the fuck you want. Like,
fuck, who is it? Fuck, I can picture his face now. Oh, God damn it, I'm going to blank on it. But anyway, lots of comedians have talked about their exes on stage
and
gotten away with it. Not even gotten away with it, it's like fine. Like, that's a lot of the content.
If you date a comedian, that's...
So what do you
expect? That's somewhere you can victim blame.
Yeah.
Oh, my ex made a joke about me. Well, you dated a comedian.
Yeah.
What do you think he was going to do?
Plus, every male comic, well, not every male comic, but a lot of them that have dated other female comics, it's like, yeah, dude, you're going to be confident.
Pretty soon.
Yeah.
Dude, dating a female comic, you got to have a 10 out of 10 dick or you're fucked.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to tell the world.
Yeah. We've had it here. We've had, like, people that have been fucking hooking up in the scene and then next minute it's just like, oh, here come the jokes. After they break up. Like, oh, shit.
I went home with this comic once. I won't say who, but, yeah.
His name was this.
Yeah. We all fucking know.
We'll call him X because that was his name.
Well, they'll perform the material directly to the comedians and then walk off stage and tell all the comedians who the jokes are about.
So there's like drama in the Newcastle scene, is there? People not rooting?
Really. Not anymore. It was like
a one-off, but I imagine the more... Like a scene grows, the more people you have, the more intermingling you're going to have.
Bullshit. Yeah. It's just like high school, man. It's wild. I think in Melbourne, there's the most, and there's a lot of incestuous behavior there.
Yeah.
I've avoided it as best as I can. Early on, there were like one or two instances, but you know, you're young.
Yeah.
But I was always like, I'm never dating a comedian.
Yeah, dude.
No way. I know what comedians are like. I'm not dating that.
Yeah, dude.
No way.
Pure crazy.
Yeah.
Pure crazy.
Yeah. One of those in a relationship is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so my girlfriend's a psychologist, so it's perfect.
Ah, dude.
So we got the crazy and the psych.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it works.
But psychologists, I want to.
Oh, a lot of them are crazy as well.
A lot of them are like, I needed to do that to figure out my own shit.
Yeah, you know how they say those who can't do teach. I know psychology is not really teaching, but like all of them have their own mental health issues.
Yeah.
You're like, hang on a minute. I wouldn't go to a fat personal trainer, you know? Like, why am I going to this psychologist with anxiety?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't go to a broke financial advisor.
No.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend hates that. But it makes sense to me. I should be able to see my psych's mental health history and to know that you've overcome these issues from your training.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because if they're like, oh, I can relate to you. I also have... three of these issues. Well, hang on.
And I got over them, unlike you.
Yeah.
So pay me.
Yeah.
I figured it out.
Yeah, we're lucky though in this scene. Like everyone's pretty like is great.
We're all like jealous of it in Sydney.
Yeah, and we weed out the creeps as well.
Yeah,
like if there's someone being difficult, if someone's a problem, we weed them out.
Like yeah, good. Yeah,
and by weed out we mean we bully them to their face.
Yeah,
we just don't talk behind people's backs. We just go like, "You're a fuckwit."
Yeah, yeah.
And what are you doing, you fucking insane person?
Yeah,
Jay the way Bellis, it should be.
I hope you're listening to this. You're a fucking nutcase, dude.
Yeah, dude, crazy.
That's so good. Yeah, we always talk about how good this scene seems from an outside perspective. Ever since this club opened, like you get the best audiences. You get young, cool audiences that actually are willing to laugh at harder stuff, but then also get smarter stuff. Whereas you just get one or the other. You get audiences in Sydney often that like smarter stuff, but then can be a bit woke on some stuff.
Mm.
Or you get the opposite where they just want to hear fucked stuff, but nothing smart at all. But every crowd I've performed to here has been fantastic. And
That's good, man.
Great scene. Yeah. Great scene. Keep it how it is. Don't let too many little random open mic sign up on the nights pop up, because that's what fucks it up, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also like just supporting each other. Like we're really supportive of each other.
Yeah,
like,
that's so good.
Like it's like if I say I'm running a show, I'll hit Eddie up and I'm like, hey, can we give out free tickets to your show in our show?
Oh,
like, do like a thing. James, same thing. Like
that's great.
Giving us fucking comp tickets to give away at our show so that people will write stuff for the bucket.
Oh, that's so good.
Like,
we do not have that. We have people bragging about how much they've sold without offering any help.
Yeah.
How did you do it? Not telling.
Yeah.
We had Gandry on the pod last week, fucking laying it down of exactly like what you should be doing.
Who, sorry?
Marketing wise, Jared Gandry.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Dude's a fucking legend, man.
Yeah, right.
Very switched on about like what you need to do to like sell shows and do things like that. And he's not keeping it all to himself. He's just like, it should be out there, man. Like,
people should know this stuff. Yeah, no, it's better for everyone. And it's always changing as well, because now you've got a lot of features online that can help generate a really large audience. But then because that's sort of clustered now, I almost think going back to a bit of in-person posters and even flyers and things could actually work, because that's so rare now.
We've been flying the shows here, which is good. It's like for the Wednesday talent show and the new material night, it's like, well, the people that are coming into the club, or they'll come to the Tuesday open mic and then we'll fly them for the Wednesday.
Yeah, great.
It's another free show. Yeah. It's on in 2 weeks' time. Fucking that's the exact audience that's going to be here for it.
Perfect.
Like they're the people to fly to, as opposed to like being out on the street being like, fucking.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, you don't want to just hit anyone there.
Yeah.
If you can foster a community at a club like this where you get a lot of regulars for those sorts of nights, that's the way to go. Because the pro nights, you just work on getting the people who are willing to pay and come out on a Friday, Saturday night. And then the open mics, you sort of, if you can get regulars there, it's actually a good, it's good when there's a few regulars at those sort of niche nights and niche rooms. I find that pretty fun,
And then you need, like, the word of mouth that, like, people know it's on, and if it's consistent enough that you're doing it, and people are like, oh, yeah, that's on again. That was sick last time. I'll come back.
Yeah.
And I'll watch it again.
How much are the tickets for the open mic here?
Free.
It's free.
Oh.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, well, yeah. Free that's show. Sick.
Yeah.
If I was in uni, that would be the perfect night out.
That's why it's the, like, craziest open mic in the country.
That's so good.
Like been packed out in here,
and then you'll probably make more from drink sales anyway. Yeah, 100%. So that's
but make it free, and then you've got 90 people in here instead of charging for it, and you get 30 or 40.
That's so sick.
Yeah. And beers are $10 each anyway. That's all you're going to charge for an open mic ticket. So
yeah,
people will come in and buy a beer.
Yeah, and dude, sleep.
And you can do a week's worth of work here, so you can hit James up, do a Tuesday. MC. You can MC Tuesday on the night.
Oh yeah,
for the open mic. You can MC Wednesday at the Stag and Hunter. You can roll down to Sydney for a Thursday. you can come back, do the Friday, Saturday, and then you can run your own show on a Sunday here. So you can do a full bill,
yeah,
like a full week, like a little bit of time on trains or whatever. But apart
that's
from what, that,
that's why we just need a Thursday show.
Yeah.
Because then you could do Tuesday till Sunday.
Yeah. So
that would be a good run.
Yeah. Yep. And that's...
We'll bring Untamed up here on a Thursday, man. We love it.
Dude,
we'll do it. Sure. Yeah. Legit. We'd probably...
Sure, man.
We'll do that, man, because we're doing it on Friday soon. Yeah, yeah. I would actually happily come up here every Thursday. Yeah, that would be sick. Dude, it's so sick
up
here.
There's nothing on a Thursday at the moment. we had heaps of open mics running, like pre-COVID, and then that just sort of like got kicked in the ass. So
honestly, if we average like 30 people here on a Thursday, I would happily drive up.
You could do 30 on a Thursday easily.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy. Especially you guys.
Like, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously like you guys clip the Untamed and all of that stuff. How long did it take you to sort of get off the ground and running with that?
Right. So it's pretty much exactly 5 years since it started. So in 2019, I just wanted a place where I can kind of try material without I always felt like, oh, he's this internet guy, and like when I was doing spots, it was like, oh, he's going to be shit. I bet he's going to be shit because he's the internet guy, and, right. and I never felt like I could comfortably fail.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck this. I'll try to run my own room. And it was Neil and friends at the start, and so I wanted to get return audience. So I was like, how can I get return audience, and how can I get a lot of clips out of it? Because it was all about fucking content and clips.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember all those sort of panel show games that there weren't really any panel shows in Australia other than Have You Been Paying Attention? And I thought, well, how can I kind of get regular content that isn't burning comedians' material that they'd be happy to write a little bit for and hopefully one day get views from? Mm. Like, let's just do these line games but make them more suitable to an online audience.
Yeah.
So that was the idea and worked a treat. For 5 years we've been doing those, and they've been – for the first 6 months they didn't go anywhere. I was posting them and I'm like, fuck, it's all for nothing. And then – randomly Chills was like, oh, I'll post them on TikTok. And I thought, there's like 15-year-olds on there. No one's going to watch that.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, just post it. And they went insane. They went viral in America. I got 1 million followers on TikTok, which, and I've been on all the other platforms for years. Mm. And then within a year and a half, I got 1 million followers on TikTok, man, which is, and it was like a lot of Americans and stuff. So anytime Americans, when they'd happen to visit Australia, they were like, oh, we got to see Comedy Untamed, man. And it's which is sick.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So that was, and then slowly but surely it morphed into, because a large part of it was like, how do you solve two problems? Get a good comedy night, but also integrate it with the modern media ecosystem. So the whole second half, I was like, we got to come up with formats that are a bit of improv because we can clip that. Yes. No comedian wants their nothing is worse than a club who clips up a comedian's joke without telling them, and it's just a complete nightmare. So, all right, the whole second half, let's just try to. So I used to do a lot of improv, like actual improv, with my friend Daniel back in high school, and I loved it. And then there's a little bit of an improv scene in Sydney, but it's like just the weirdest cunts that do improv, man. It's like the cringiest, weirdest fucking cunts. And I love the art form because it can be good. It can be really funny. It's
basically riffing.
Yeah. Like, and if it's done properly, if it's done by people who aren't like the lamest cunts in them, I'm really hating on these people. But I actually think they've ruined the brand of improv because they're just the weirdest people.
Dude, I used to love watching Whose Line Is It Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I know it's pre-recorded and all that shit, but like I like that's when it's done well. It's funny.
And it's so impressive to an audience, but there's an art to it. There's a skill to it. So you guys remember when it was me and the tall guy, Dan, and we'd do that.
Yeah.
So we were doing that for a long time, and then it just kept going viral and viral. And I was like, fuck, I'm sick of the festivals and the scene a little bit. How about I just kind of really see how big this can grow as a brand? And so I was like, look, all the clips are going well. Let's try to expand the show a little bit. I spoke to Casey Gothard and Rohan in Melbourne. Well, they approached me actually because we were flying to Melbourne every 2 months to do a show there.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you want us to run the Melbourne show? And I was like, I've wanted someone to do that. That's perfect. You guys do it. And what we do is we like organize the lines the week of. And so both cities do those same lines and we get it uploaded to the drive. Yeah. And now Max is the one editing it, and So it's this cool thing how it's like this network of shows that are connected by the line games and
yeah.
all the clips. If one clip goes viral, it helps everyone. And yeah, it was probably 2022 when it started to, because 2020, 2021 was all that COVID shit and was a lot of breaks in and out. That's when it was going mega viral on online. And then 2022 was when I started really trying to a lot more with like Max and Daniel. We were traveling a lot and we were doing it in Brisbane at the sit down, but I realized it wasn't feasible for us to basically be this like traveling circus as fun as it was for a year. Yeah. It was getting pretty exhausting. So yeah, it was just about finding the right people in each city to run the room. And it's a room that already has an established audience. So it's not like you're really starting from scratch. And
yeah,
Melbourne's been running it since then. They started doing a few in Geelong, which is sort of like their Newcastle in a way.
Yeah.
Ash Chapman is doing the one in Brisbane. So there's like five Comedy Untamed places running and we all do the same lines that week. So we all kind of clip that together and it's been really cool. And last year we did the first showcase so I was going to film my special anyway, but what I did is made it a show where the first half was all just like the comedians doing 10-minute spots from each of the Untamed shows and filming that as though it was, you know how the gala used to actually be really fucking good?
Yeah.
And Australians would be like, sick, this is the next big comedian. We're going to see them.
Box-checking fucking bullshit.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, let me try to do something like that. Yeah. I mean, the resources are all there. I'm going to film this anyway. All I have to do is just extend the show and it's a better show for the people coming. So we did that and, you know, it went really well. A lot of clips from it went viral as well. So it's all just been really good. It's been a bit tough this year just with like the economy and stuff. It's just, I don't know if you guys are feeling the same thing, but
yeah, we're doing free shows, dude.
Yeah.
You know what it's like.
People just don't have money, man. So it is a bit of a slog, but look, I think we're in a good position. We got like 150K just on Comedy Untamed on Facebook and we got 70K or 60K on TikTok and 20K on Instagram. So just the brand itself is doing really well. And
yeah, man.
Yeah, I'd like in an ideal world, there'll be a weekly show in like all the major cities in Australia.
Mm.
But right now it's hard to, I can't expand it right now with just the way the economy is. I'm giving more kind of ownership to the other people as well. And
yeah.
But I've always thought there could definitely be a weekly one here because, like, we love the Newcastle show here and it always sells out like crazy. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, that's the story of it. It was just a way to, like, get content for me to. I want to be able to try shit and not be worried about failing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then allowing comedians to do something that's clippable but still related to stand up. And then. You know, after a while, sometimes the line games get a bit repetitive and hacky, but it's still a way to sort of do stand-up without burning your material.
Yeah.
And get yourself out there and some of them go really viral, so.
And it's only repetitive and hacky to us.
Like exactly. To the average punter, they're like, oh, great.
I love that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I haven't seen this for a while,
like
so.
The fucking dad jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Like dad jokes go nuts. All that,
we should start doing
stuff.
Dad jokes, dude. Every week, just come on the podcast with a dad joke.
Yeah.
And just clip it and put it out. I guarantee you to get like.
And you have to do a shot if you laugh.
You just steal their fucking brand.
Steal what? Like,
no, get a few models on as well.
There's so many of those too.
Yeah, no.
They're not the only ones doing it.
No. I think.
I want to know what happened with that too. There's some shit that went down.
There's drama there.
I want to know. I want to know the gossip.
Who fucked who?
Just a
who?
Pay dispute at the end, I think.
Oh, really? Maybe. Is that all?
Yeah, I think so.
Fair enough.
That's not fucking
fun. Still, I want to know. Yeah. Come on, How to Not Comedy, you fuckers.
Yeah, come
I'll
back.
Have both sides on.
Yeah.
Why do you feel like you should be able to not pay people? Anyway.
Yeah. How much ad revenue did you get? And how much did you pay your acts? Let's see. Let's find out. Bring receipts, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. That's one of the things you do as well. You pay people. And if the show does well, you'll give us bonuses. Like one of the weeks you're like, hey, man, fucking great set. here's a little extra demand. There's not enough of that goes down, man. Like, well, too many people are in it just to fucking take the cash and run.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I mean, it's... Well, because I think I am a... Because I'm a comedian, I know what it's like. Whereas I think a lot of these other guys are just... Don't get me wrong, I want to make money from the shows as well, but
yeah.
I think if it's a really big pie, we should all share it.
Yeah.
And
I think it's like you're shooting yourself in the foot as a room runner if you're not paying your acts properly.
Yeah.
It's like you want people to be able to like support themselves with comedy so that they can do comedy more and they're keen to do more comedy. If you're not paying them, then they're going to be like, oh, now I have to work a full-time job and, like, do this and that.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
All this other shit comes up and it's like, well, then they're not going to write as much. They're not going to perform as much. It's you're going to be left with a shitty scene and you're not going to have good comics coming up.
That's exactly it. Yeah, it's... Yeah, you got to kind of not just look out for yourself in a way. And I think it's hard because the pie is so small in Australia. It's so hard to make. It's so hard to take the step from doing it part-time to full-time even as a room rat, as anything. And so people are kind of just really holding on to every penny. Again, especially now. It's probably just going to get worse, unfortunately. But when it's a sort of good scene where there's a lot of money around and people want to come see comedy, I think, yeah, if people were a bit more, not charitable, but fair with what I give comedians, it will just make the comedy better. It would make comedians want to do a better set. I know when I'm getting paid, you know, not much, I don't really care. I sort of will try new stuff. I still try to put on a degree of professionalism, make sure it's still a good set. But when it's like a well-paid set, I'm always...
You're bringing your A game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so... Yeah, I know that, and I understand that. So
yeah.
I think that's a pretty fair thing to do.
I heard Perth's pretty good for like pay wise.
Oh, Perth pays like crazy. Yeah. In that just one, the Comedy Lounge is like the. That's such a good club, man. That he's so nice. He pays the next day. It's because to get comedians over there, they got to pay so much more for flights and accommodation, and he still will get them over there. But then he manages to charge. He charges like $55 a ticket, but it's such a good night constantly that the whole of Perth knows it, and he just built the brand so well. And he's just a genius.
If he's just cherry picking like the best acts, like he's just gonna have the sickest shows.
Yeah, he's so nice. He's so good to work with. He just that's the standard for like the to become like a really big, good club that in that city. I think that's.
Dude, in that city too, like,
like,
obviously there's money there, like mining money or whatever. That's how you can charge so much for tickets. But also, like, you're fucking, it's a hard slog. It is not easy opening a club, and it's not easy opening a club on the other side of the fucking country where the majority of the population is on the East
Where there's,
Coast.
Yeah, there's a limited amount of comics as well. But then he develops comics in Perth, and he's got a sort of open mic on the Saturday that then leads into a new material night, and he's constantly trying to get open micers to be better. And he's just, it's perfectly run. There's nothing that, at least from my perspective, I can say he could do better. It's just top, it's the standard, I think.
Yeah.
There's some really good clubs in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane as well, but that one is just the best.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. How long's it been open, do you know?
I think I remember first doing it in sort of 2016, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think it wasn't open much more before then, I think. So maybe close to 10 years. But less than that even. It's not. It's still pretty young compared to the other clubs. I kind of sit down the store and Comics Lounge have been around a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas that one, I think he was running rooms before that, but I'm pretty sure 10-ish years, I think. I don't know for sure, but I think, yeah.
That's my bad. Fuck.
Oh.
All right.
That's the comedian alarm. That's when you got to wake up for the set.
Yeah, it's not a full fucking episode of How to Not Comedy until the tech fucks out. And I fucked it.
Yeah.
That is an hour, though.
Yeah, that is an hour. Have you got any dates coming up?
shows? Yeah, I'm doing a solo tour in October, November.
Do you run those at the festivals or you just do it?
No, I'm trying to do them outside of festivals.
Yeah, fuck yes, dude.
I'm trying to...
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. Like,
it's better. It's more rewarding. I do find... Look, festivals do probably add a few more tickets, but then they're taking more and more money anyway. Yeah. So it's not even worth it.
And then
so.
You're competing with every other person running shows on the festival.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what's the point? Yeah. I actually think the Australian scene would be better if there's no festivals.
Mm.
I know that's maybe a big call, but I just think what the festivals do is it trains Australians to only go see comedy during the festival.
Yeah.
And then it encourages a style that's more narrative-based when... it's good. I think it's a good skill to do the narrative style of comedy,
but it's
all
our shows that someone's like cobbled together because they're like, oh, I need my new hour.
Exactly.
For the festival
this year. It's rushed and it's not good.
Out.
And then they try that at clubs and it's like, it's never as hard hitting and funny as the American comics. And, you know, there's this perception now that Australian comedy is just trash. You ask average people and
for the most part it fucking is. If it's festival shows for an hour that aren't really up to scratch.
Exactly, but I think if we you know, there are really funny people here and it's just the infrastructure and the sort of the way the scene works is incentivizes subpar comedy because you're trying to rush a festival show, you're trying to get into media. And you're not just focusing on stand-up, whereas you get to do that in the UK and America. And so if we can just... I think it really starts with a good, strong club scene.
Yeah.
And festivals just take away from that. So I really think festivals are bad for the scene, even though that would seem crazy for a comedian to say, but long-term...
We're on that side of the fence too.
I just think... Like- It would be better because then people would always have an appetite to still see solo shows, but they'd want to go. They'd go to clubs. They'd then find a comedian they like, go see their solo show, and then I just think it would be better. I think it would be a better. And then you know there aren't all these random festival directors that make hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars from our taxes, then put on shit comedy festivals. Like what's that's crazy. There's no accountability.
Like pretty big names in Australian comedy come through here and do like four shows, like four solos, working shit out to then go and do one down the road at the Civic, and it's like the same gear.
Yeah,
just testing it out here first, and instead of paying X amount for a room hire at a festival, it's like they can just come in here, pay the small amount. A higher fee.
Labor.
And then collect all the ticket sales. It's like, why wouldn't you fucking do that?
You end up making more money. Even if it's a 300-seat room, if you sell out the 90 here, you probably make more money.
Yeah.
Because you guys do such a good deal. And
you can charge whatever you want for tickets too.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, and like obviously bigger names are charging more money.
Yeah.
And they'll charge like, you know, 40-something for here. But then it'll be double that when they're down at the Civic later on in the year after they've figured out their new hour.
Yeah.
But they're figuring it out here.
Mm.
It's not like doing a run at a like Melbourne Comedy Festival to figure it out.
Yeah, and that's because if it's not advertised as a show that's where you're figuring it out, then you got punters coming thinking they're going to see at the festival, you're probably going thinking, here's this good comedian I love. I want to see their best show. And then they're seeing a sort of half-baked version of the show. And that's what I didn't. I never liked the... I think in an ideal world, I would do a tour once every 2 years.
Mm.
So I just think once a year, a one-hour show, it's never going to be high quality. Maybe even once every 3 years, man, like because I do pretty much just club gear.
Yeah.
And you can't come up with an hour of that.
For Christ's sake, I'm sorry. I get upset at this, the amount of posters I see with, like, it's a work-in-progress show. I even saw Lawrence Mooney with it on his fucking poster. I'm like... Brother, you should be better than this. What are you doing?
You know what they are? They're cowards. Because they know they're not that good. Well, and so they're like, oh, I don't want to go to the club where the comedians are going to judge me. Fucking, if your material is good, you'd go to a club and you'd fucking put it out there.
If you wanted to work out an hour and you have an hour of material and it's, you know, you could do 7 minutes at a time, break it up. That's like 10 sets roughly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Come down and do 10 sets at a fucking club. and figure out what works and what doesn't instead of selling a dog shit hour show.
Oh, it's so shit because then people go to that show thinking, oh, that wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Why are you putting on a show if it's not a...
It's not tested in front of an audience.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's so ridiculous. Yeah, and all these bigger guys are doing it now. Yeah, Lawrence Mooney and whatever. Like, fucking, you guys are the big dogs. Like, come to the club. You'll get a spot.
Yeah, 100%.
You just want to make more money.
Yeah.
They're pretty greedy at this point. Like, fuck, how much more money do these cunts want?
But you would make more money in the long run if you were like, I'm going to go down to the club and put the work in and make this sick.
Yeah.
And then... instead of just doing it as a work in progress show, then people see it and they're like, "Yeah, whatever." And then it's like, are they going to be doing that hour at a theater later? Probably not.
Yeah,
maybe I'll eat my words.
And even then, but what's the point of a work in progress show if you're doing it to your audience?
Yeah,
you're doing it to your audience. You're not getting a proper reflection of how good the material is because. Yeah. Your audience are going to love everything you do, regardless of whether it's actually good or not.
Yeah.
And so you got to actually go to rooms where people don't know you.
Yeah.
And
it's not to say that you can't just come down here and do like the L. Like Tom Gleason came in, did like 4 shows back to back, fucking sold out, and crushed pretty much all of them. And it was like work in progress, but he's that fucking good. And then that material is now in the show gear that he's doing down at the Civic.
Mm-hmm.
Like he did it that way, but he didn't go out and say like, "Hey guys, this is a work in progress." Like, obviously, he had notes on stage like the first time, and he would like address the elephant in the room if he had to like look at them.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that, it was just like, yeah, it's not being sold as a fucking like an hour show at the Civic because it's here, it's in a club, so the audience knows that it's like it's not a full on hour show, and the ticket price reflects it as well because you're like, I'm not charging $80 for it. So, like, why do you need to say it's a work in progress?
And you know what I reckon it is as well? Because those guys, I think, like, Token and the big management, they know they'll make the most money by pushing these guys to do an hour every year. Mm. So they're doing a lot more narrative-heavy style. So they've got all of them just do stories now. And they don't even write, they're funny and everything, but it's like, that's why you can't really try that out at a club. You can't try a 15-minute story at a club where you've got 7 to 10 minutes to really crush.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're doing this long winded fucking. I went to this and then this person said this.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. You do that in a club and everyone's like, fuck, cunt, it's been 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Hurry up, motherfucker.
Yeah.
People will be on the side of the guy saying, is this a Nazi show?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on who's telling the story on stage. Yeah. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, yeah. I think it's slowly. I know I really do hope. I just think the festival model is just creating bad comedy. Yeah. It's creating wrong incentives. It just
we're eating our own tail.
Yeah, and then there's no mentorship. Like in America, like Shane Gillis has brought James McCann on as an opener for all his shows, and now he's a megastar, right?
Mm.
No one does that here.
Yeah.
As if Husey or Will Anderson or Lawrence. Oh, we've got
Isaac Butterfield. He's getting on Ben McLennan from the club. Yeah.
And
so
credit to, they all hate him. They're all like, this guy's a fucking Nazi. Well, he's been nicer to up-and-coming comedians than you cunts have.
Yeah.
You know? So even at these work-in-progress shows, like, as if they wouldn't have an... I mean, as if you wouldn't have an opener.
Yeah.
Here's a cool guy from Newcastle. He's just going to do 5. He's doing a show soon. That would be such a nice thing to do.
Dick for 10 minutes so they can learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Nah, they got to pay off their fucking 10th house.
I opened for Akmal when he was in town. That was pretty fucking horrific. I bombed.
But he let you open.
He's a man.
He's a man. Yeah.
And like I see guys like you and Butsy and like that, you guys are doing your own thing. Like I think that's fucking sick. I think that's the way to go.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I respect that a lot.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you. And you guys killing it with this club. And I love it.
Thanks for coming on, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks.
All right. You want to plug anything?
Yeah, you can check us here monthly. Check out Newcastle Comedy Club, Is This Something? Mm. And show us your bits for the fucking wildest talent show you can ever find in Australia.
All right, sweet. Yeah. What's better than eating a mandarin?
What?
Eating a mandarin out. Clip it.
All right. We're out.